Welcome to The Roofer Show with your host, Dave Sullivan. You found the podcast that helps roofing contractors grow their businesses, make more money, and have more free time. Each week, Dave interviews the industry's top experts who will give you actionable tips and strategies for the real world of construction to help you take your roofing business to the next level. So let's get down to business.
Hey everybody, what's up? And welcome to The Roofer Show, the place to be if you want to grow a more profitable roofing business. I'm your host, Dave Sullivan, and I've been a successful roofing contractor for over 30 years, and I'm here to share with you what I've learned. You can get more tips, strategies, and free downloads by going to my website at theroofershow.com. This is episode number 88, which means I've been doing this for 88 weeks. And today, I've got a fantastic interview, which I know everybody is going to love. I'll get into that in a minute. So I started out just thinking I was going to do a few podcasts, but I was just having such a blast, having some great interviews, getting some great feedback from all the listeners. Listenership has been growing unbelievably. So I really appreciate that. Just this week, I got a couple more reviews. We're up to 57 five-star reviews. Really appreciate it. It really helps get the show out there, gives me some great feedback, keeps me going to put these shows out. So if you haven't left a review, I would really appreciate it. You go down to the big button on the show notes, just click it, walks you through, take you 2 minutes, but it really helps. And just like your roofing company, if you don't ask, you're not going to get reviews, and five-star reviews for your business are critical. But you've got to have a system, you've got to ask for them, and you got to make sure that you are giving an awesome customer experience, which I try to do each week, and hopefully you're getting value out of this. If you are, leave me a review. It really helps. Appreciate it. Now we're coming into the new year. Here it is time. If you have not gotten your business plan together, get out and do it. This is something we talk about all the time. Get your act together coming into the new year. Something that I can help you with is you go to my website. I've got a one-page business plan that you can walk through in a couple hours. It's going to give you a basic plan, get you thinking about the new year, what's ahead, what you need to work on, what's gone well, and it's really simple. And it's a free download. Check it out if that's something you're interested in. It's specifically for contractors, written by contractors. That'd be me. And it's similar to the program that we used. We would take a retreat every year, get our act together for the new coming year, spend a couple of days away from the office. And this one, it just gets you started on the process of planning. So check it out. And let's all have a kick-ass 2019. All right, enough of that. So I promised a great interview today, and I've got one. This is actually a rerun. It's the number one show that I did. It's the first show, and I was lucky enough at that time to get Bill Good, who was then the CEO of the NRCA. What we talked about was his takeaways from interviewing well over 500 roofing contractors over the years. And we have a great talk about what's going on in the industry, what's ahead, what are the problems that we face. And yeah, this was a year ago. It's still so relevant today. And I would really like to hear your comments on any changes that you've seen, if your thoughts, but we have a great discussion. And I wanted to replay this because a lot of these shows, we're going back 88 shows ago. This is one of my most popular shows. It's been downloaded well over 2,000 times by roofing contractors all over the world. I've got Australia, I've got the UK, Canada. It is truly amazing at the variety of listeners that have caught this show. So I just wanted to replay it, and I just left the old intro, and hopefully I'm getting a little better at podcasting after 88 weeks, because I really talk slow in that this episode. But it's was great talking to Bill. He's retired now, hopefully sitting on the beach somewhere. I haven't talked to him in a while, but hope he's doing well. And this is a great interview. We talk about the problems that we had then, and they really apply to today. So I would love to hear your comments in the show notes. Send me an email. Let me know what you think, what problems you're dealing with, and if these are still the same issues that we all face in the day-to-day. But before we get into the interview, I just want to thank our sponsor, and that's Ruby Receptionists. They make this podcast possible. And Ruby provides a great service that every contractor should really take a hard look at to see if it's right for them. The best way to do that is take them for a test drive. And if you haven't, go check out their website at callruby.com/roofershow. They've got a great video that lays out the program. But this is something that's really helped the contractors that I work with, leaving a great first impression with their prospects and customers, answer the questions that they have. It's a totally different service than just one of these crappy answering services or pushing your prospects into voicemail, because they're not going to leave a message. They're just going to go down the list until they find somebody that they can speak with directly. So check them out. Call ruby.com/roofershow and see if it's right for you. All right, well, let's just jump in our interview with Bill Good. Bill has been the CEO of the National Roofing Contractors Association for most of the past 30 years, so he is the man when it comes to understanding the problems that roofing contractors face every day. I'm still an NRCA member and have known Bill for the past 25 years, and he was the first guy I would call whenever I had a problem at my company, and he always hooked me up with someone that could help. He's also a really smart guy and has an MBA from the University of Chicago. And that's a good school. Home of Milton Friedman, the great economist. Had to read a number of his textbooks. And that's pretty dry stuff. For those of you that aren't NRCA members, you should be. And have got to check it out at nrca.net. I guess the .com was taken. So their mission is pretty simple. Assist contractors and advance the industry. The NRCA is 129 years old with 3,500 members. And a staff of 53. Half the members do both residential and commercial, and 50% of members do less than $1 million in sales. So there's something there for everyone. Bill is retiring this year, so before he hits the beach, I wanted to tap his experience and find out what's really going on out there in the roofing industry from someone who knows. He talks with a lot of contractors every year, so I want to know what kind of problems he's hearing out there and what we can do to solve them. So let's get to the interview with Bill Good. Hey, Bill, thanks for coming on to the show today. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
So I hear you're going to be packing it up here pretty quick. Finally get into that after 30 years, finally retiring. What's the plan ahead?
Well, my plan is to keep my fingers in the organization a little bit for the next several months, working on some projects and helping with some fundraising. We have a foundation here that is doing some really good work for the industry, and I hope to be able to keep involved with that. And then we'll kind of see. People say you can never actually leave the roofing industry. There's something about getting that asphalt in your blood, and it stays with you. And I've been around the industry most of my adult life, and I'm not quite ready to go sit on the beach yet, so I hope to stay involved a little bit.
Well, great. I know how that is. I've been semi-retired for about 5 years after 30 years of contracting, and yeah, it's tough to get away from it.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I wanted to ask you, so as the CEO of the NRCA, or that you still are, the National Roofing Contractors Association, why should the average roofing contractor join NRCA? And what are they going to get out of it? Because it is pretty expensive for the average guy.
What we tell people is a couple of things. First of all, we'd like to believe that there are some direct, tangible benefits. You get access to a magazine we publish every month, and a 4-volume manual that we publish that we believe has practices sort of for design and application of all different kinds of roofs. But then there's the intangibles, which include our work in Washington, D.C. on behalf of the roofing industry, and our work in the building code arena, which is becoming more and more complicated and more important. And we're now devoting essentially a full-time person here just to working on building codes and standards and trying to make sure that the roofing industry has a voice in that arena. And then the other thing I would say is we are in the middle now of building a really significant new training program here. And we think it's one that's going to be transformational for the industry. It's going to be delivered a lot online so people can put their workers in front of a computer to get some training kind of 24/7. It's going to have a hands-on component. It's going to be delivered in a lot of different kind of fun learning formats. And most important, it's going to lead to credentials. So people who actually complete these courses and demonstrate that they know how to apply roofs will wind up getting credentials as they go through the program. And we think that's something that's going to be really exciting for the industry and really beneficial to contractors.
Yeah, I think that sounds fantastic because training, as we know, the workforce, finding the guys, getting them trained, keeping them retained is definitely the number one problem we face in our industry.
No doubt about it. I have had the opportunity, as you would imagine, to be in front of a lot of contractors in my career. And I always ask, when I have the opportunity to do that, I always ask them, what are the things that keep you awake at night? What are the things that you worry about? And the answers vary, of course, over time, depending on what's going on in the economy and what's going on in their world. But lately, it has been almost unanimous. Everybody I talk to says, we got to solve the workforce issue. We got to be able to find people. We got to be able to keep people. We have to figure out ways to train them. And one of the things that we have learned from the work that we've done and some of the studies that we've done is that people who come into the industry expect to be trained, and they expect to be trained according to a career path. So in other words, if I'm successful at being a roofer, then I know that if I would like to, I'll have the opportunity maybe to become a foreman or to become a project manager or an estimator, but somehow move up in the company. But in order to do that, they know that they need to be trained, and so they expect to be trained. And training in the roofing industry has been uneven. We haven't had a good, consistent training program. So that's why we decided to get into that arena.
Yeah, that's great, because that's something that's always been needed, and it's kind of been haphazard. I know that we've had a number of them, but this would be more of a cookie-cutter type of thing where everybody can get on. And I like the idea of being certified. I think that's a great tool we can have.
Well, we have a different demographic in the industry today than we did back in the good old days. Almost 60% of our workers today are Latino. Mm-hmm. So what that suggests to us is that we have some language issues we have to deal with. We have some demographic issues we need to deal with, and we have cultural issues. And we need to make sure that our members understand all of those and how important they become in the way that we think about hiring people and keeping people and training people. And we know we have to be adapting to a different workforce, good or bad. And I think mostly it's good, by the way, but it's definitely the reality. The reality is we have a different workforce than we did when you and I started in this industry. And so we just have to be attuned to that and figure out how to address it the best way.
Well, I think that some of the numbers are pretty scary, where I heard that the average field worker is now 42 years old, and the average apprentice that's coming into our industry is about 30 years old. So, I mean, we've got new challenges with that. We've got back injuries, obviously, and people just getting worn out. What are we going to do about it?
Well,
guys.
Yeah, roofing is not a good job for a retiree. You know, it's we need to figure out how to get the 18 to 22 year olds that we used to get. The average apprentice roofer that joins the roofers union is now just about 30 years old. And what that tells us is we're not doing a good job attracting the kids coming out of high school or coming out of vocational school or coming out of the military. And I think we've got to approach that for sure. The other thing we know is we have a fundamental demographic problem in this country. We're getting older as a country. So there are fewer young people entering the workforce today than there have been in the last couple of generations. And that trend is going to continue. And there's nothing we can do about that today. There just aren't as many babies being born as there were 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. So what that suggests, I think, to us is we have to look for other sources for our workers. One of those sources for sure is people to come into the country from outside the country. And we have to work on our immigration policy to make it something that is reasonable and that allows for people who want to work in industries like ours, where we have trouble attracting native-born Americans. We have to have a policy, it seems to me, that enables that. Do it legally, make sure we have borders secure, do all of those things. But we can't just say we're going to shut our borders down and not allow anybody in the country, because construction industry would feel that, the agricultural industry would feel that, the hospitality industry would feel that. in all these industries. We're competing with all those industries for workers today, and all of them say the same thing. We need to have legal immigrant labor in order for us to be successful. We get criticized also from time to time from some of our friends in Congress who say, you know, all you guys want to do is hire cheap labor. And that's not it at all. What we want to do is find good labor. Most parts of the country today, somebody entering the industry enters it at least twice the minimum wage. So we're not talking about entry-level retail jobs, or we're not talking about minimum wage jobs. We're talking about good-paying jobs with a really good opportunity for growth. So somehow we have to tell that story better.
Yeah, I agree. They're not coming in taking jobs that Americans want to do. We just can't find the people that are, for whatever reason, wanting to get into this trade. And as you say, it is a great trade. It's a high-paying trade, a lot of opportunity for growth. But I know a number of contractors who could take on more work, but they just can't find the people, so they have to turn down the jobs. And these positions just aren't getting filled.
Yeah, and you know, the other part of that story too is it's not that the work isn't getting done, but what's happened as a result of this is now we've created this black market. Those roofs that the good contractors are turning down, and I hear that all the time from people saying, I could double my business, or I could grow my business by 50% if I just had the workforce. So what happens instead is that work goes to the contractors who are willing to hire illegal immigrants, to pay them in cash, to do poor work, not to pay insurance, not to pay Social Security and other benefits. And we've kind of created that by our policy of being so restrictive on allowing people to come into the country to do the work that kind of goes begging for us. The problem just accelerates, it seems to me, and it gets worse unless we can figure out a more reasonable approach to immigration policy, and unless we can figure out a way to get into the traditional sources of labor for us, the schools and vo-tech schools and military, and tell our story a little bit more effectively there.
Right. Those are some great points. I've always had a problem with the big push to get everybody into college, four-year college. And I think with the elimination of good trade schools, where so many of these guys could have more opportunities as opposed to going to a four-year college, coming out with a bunch of school debt, and then going to work at Starbucks, I think is ridiculous, where you can bring guys into the trades where they've got a tremendous future, high-paying wages, but I just don't think they're, you know, the country is pushing that enough.
No, we're beginning to see a little bit of a shift back toward that because some people are beginning to understand that college isn't for everybody. The statistics are pretty staggering. High school guidance counselors push kids into college because they think that's the right thing to do. In some cases, the schools actually have financial incentives to send more of their graduates to college. And then a third of them don't make it. A third of them drop out in the first year for whatever reason. And then it's not good for their self-esteem. It's not good for their career pathing, all of that. And in the meantime, here we have jobs that are good paying jobs. And I had the opportunity to speak to a group of high school guidance counselors not too long ago. And I told them, give me an 18-year-old kid who can pass a drug test and will work hard for 3 years. And in 3 years, they'll be making more money than you are. Mm-hmm. And nobody believed it, but it's absolutely true.
Sure is.
And they'll have a great opportunity to kind of do whatever they want to do in the roofing industry if they have that kind of ambition. And you know, a lot of our members, a lot of good roofing contractors started out working on the roof and saw an opportunity to start their own business. And that's part of the story that we have to tell too. It's not just you can have a career in roofing and work on roofs all your life, but you can take on a lot of different components of our industry and be active in the industry in a number of different ways, some of which involve working with your hands and being outdoors all day, which a lot of people enjoy. And some of it can involve taking on more responsibility and management roles and sales roles. And it's a really interesting industry, it seems to me, and we have a really good story to tell.
Yeah, okay. And I think NRCA is doing a great job on that. Hopefully we can turn this around a little bit. But before we get into some of the other problems that we're facing, I just wanted to talk to you. Both of us have been in this industry about 30 years. And what have you seen? What are the changes you've seen over that time? And I know us old timers, everybody talks about the good old days. As I recall, some of those days weren't all that good, but we've certainly seen a lot of changes. So what would you think is, for better or worse, some of the changes that you've seen in the industry over the last 30 years?
Yeah, I heard somebody say one time that the good old days weren't so good when you were sitting in a dentist chair. And I think maybe the same applies to the roofing industry. I mean, when I started in this industry, which was back in the 1970s, it was predominantly what we call built-up roof industry. It was hot asphalt applied on the roof with layers of roofing felt to kind of act as the support for the asphalt, which was the waterproofing agent. And it was probably 80% of the commercial industrial market at that time. That's how we built roofs. And today, that built-up roofing piece of the market is less than 10%. So we have gone through an enormous shift in the product type, in the way that we build roofs, generation, which is really pretty remarkable if you think about it. We're a really mature industry. Obviously, roofs have been around since the beginning of any kind of building. And for us to go through that change, that big of a change that fast, is really pretty remarkable. So we're using materials today that are thermoplastic and thermoset, and we use acronyms like PVC, the same material that's used to make a lot of household products used in roofing. And we use products that are rubber-like, and they're applied in a single layer, which means for the workers, it's not as difficult a task, much more labor-friendly, much more material handling involved in roof construction than building the roof on the job. And the other big shift that we've seen, and it's been more in the last probably 15 years than the last 30 years, is people are beginning to understand the importance of the roof to energy conservation and to protecting the environment. So we know now that the roof in a lot of buildings is the single most important component for saving energy. We put insulation on roofs. We have roofs that are reflective. We have roofs now that incorporate vegetation, gardens. We have roofs now that incorporate solar panels. So the roof is used today as a big part of the building owner's energy conservation initiatives. And by doing that, we obviously are doing good for the environment. So we've been able to tell a much different story, not only to building owners, but to government officials and to architects and to others who are interested in all of those things, that our industry plays a really important role. We didn't have those kind of conversations, as you know, Dave, 30 or 40 years ago. This is new stuff. It's exciting for us because it repositions us. We used to think about the roof as the thing that kept water out of the building, and now we think about the roof as the platform for energy conservation. Much different conversation.
Yeah, well, I think that's so much for the image of the industry also, and getting that word out there. I think people still equate roofing with slopping on hot tar, and as far as just being a totally difficult job. Well, I know when I walk into somebody's home, the first thing they do is still look at my shoes, you know. But I think we've got a real opportunity to change the image where the products, you know, we don't have the smell, we don't have the danger of burns also with these new materials. And so hopefully we can get that word out. Recruiting will be easier, but also just educating building owners and for the general image of the industry, I think is huge improvements.
Absolutely. Yeah, it really allows us to reposition. The work is a lot less hazardous, and we're doing a lot better job as an industry in terms of safety management, making sure that we have appropriate fall protection, making sure that we're attuned to workers and some of the musculoskeletal type of injuries that they have. I think we're doing a lot better job there. We still have a ways to go, but we're doing a much better job with that. And that helps in recruiting also. If you're describing jobs that are more interesting and more helpful to the environment, more helpful to the kind of national policy of energy conservation, that's a much different message than we need somebody to mop hot asphalt all day long.
Right, right. Well, getting into the next issue that I see out there and what I would think and always had a problem with, these increasing regulations and the crazy things that we have to deal with in this industry. I got to imagine you're hearing a lot of that out in the marketplace.
Yeah, we hear about that all the time too, as you might imagine. And when we talk about government regulation in roofing, we always kind of begin and end the conversation talking about OSHA. Occupational Safety and Health Administration has had us on their radar screen for since they were created back in 1970. The roofing industry was one of their original five target industries. So we've had kind of a love-hate relationship with them for a very long time. And recently, we've got into the weeds with them on some rules that we've disagreed with. A lot of our members have had issues with. They, a few years ago, changed the rule on fall protection on residential roofing, requiring that all workers have harnesses and lanyards and be tied off on pretty much on all jobs all the time. We thought that was overkill. We thought there are, in many cases, better ways to provide fall protection than doing that because we're creating a lot of tripping hazards when we introduce ropes onto roof surfaces. Mm-hmm. We also have a new silica rule that came from OSHA that will begin to be enforced this June. We have a lot of concerns about that, how it's going to be enforced, how contractors can comply with it. We know that there's silica in a lot of roofing products, but we also know that in a lot of cases, the silica is embedded in asphalt or is released in very, very small amounts over a very short period of time. And yet we may find ourselves having to go through a whole list of expensive compliance measures in order to be able to comply. You know, when you look at regulations one at a time, sometimes they seem like, well, that's not so bad. That seems pretty reasonable. But when you add them all together and look at what a contractor, a roofing contractor, has to do in order to be in compliance with everything out there, it becomes staggering. And we hear from a lot of members who say, if I could just do roofing, I'd be fine. But now I have to spend, you know, my day doing government regulation compliance. Not only in a lot of cases unnecessary, but what it ultimately does, of course, is it just adds to the cost of the roof for the consumer. Sure. And sometimes we think it's just unnecessary layer of cost.
Yeah, well, that's something that NRCA has really done a great job, been a big help for us, because just trying to keep up on these regulations, it's, as you say, staggering. And you guys have so many classes, ways to keep up on this. And also, where it certainly made my money 10 times over for a membership is in the how to deal with OSHA inspections and what happens when you get your fines and this and that. And that's just a brutal deal, and it can really make your life miserable. So I know that you've got a number of programs where not only how to deal with the inspection, but if you do have to go in front of OSHA, you've got packages that here's how you do it.
Yeah, not only that, we have people on our staff here who have been with us a very long time and have become expert on OSHA regulations and can help members kind of go through not only the process, but understand when they get a fine, here are the things that you can do. And in a lot of cases, there is quite a lot a contractor can do. You can go through a hearing process, you can contest the fine. We actually got a refund, to believe it or not, for a member who had gotten a fine, unjust fine, and we appealed to the feds on that one, and they wrote the guy a check. I mean, that doesn't happen very often, but we savor small victories when we get them with OSHA, I can promise you that.
Well, there are a lot of things you can do, and we've gone to bat, and you guys have helped us out through your legal department, and there is a lot that can be done, so that's a great service that you guys have, I know, and can highly recommend that one. I've got what is going on, and I know that everything is in flux, but healthcare has been a huge issue in this industry. I don't know what you're hearing out there, but I know it's a problem with so many people, and now we've got Trump in here throwing this, who knows what's going to happen. What can you give? What kind of help can you give contractors on this?
Oh, man, I wish I knew. I really, as you said, it's in the category today, I think, of who knows. We're going to see, obviously, it's no secret that the Republican Party is planning to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. We think that's a good idea overall, provided that the replacement is something that'll be reasonable and helpful. What's interesting is we're joined in that appeal by some of our friends in the construction unions, because they don't like Obamacare. They feel it's hurt them because of the so-called Cadillac tax. So they have to pay a tax because they offer their members a really good product. They have to pay a tax on it. And that makes them then less competitive in the marketplace. So right. They don't like it either. So we have kind of interesting allies in this endeavor. We know that we have members who have just decided not to provide health insurance anymore because they look at it as cheaper just to pay the penalties for not providing it. And that seems to me to be pretty counterproductive. I think there's an opportunity for, there's a model that we call association health plans that we've never been able to have an association-sponsored health plan successfully because of federal laws that make it difficult for us to cross state borders. So one of the things that's being talked about in Congress now is an opportunity to for associations to develop plans that they can offer to their members that would be national in scope. Obviously, we would love that. We think it makes a lot of sense. We can provide some economies that way, you know, work with a single carrier perhaps to build a program. But in order to do it, the law has to be changed so that we can do it across state lines.
Right.
Because otherwise, we have to get 50 different approvals to market an insurance program, and no insurance company wants to do that. So I think there's opportunity here. I think we're going to have to be careful that we don't just repeal the law and don't have anything to fold in, because an awful lot of people would be affected by that. But I think done right, this could be a great opportunity for us and for the country, frankly, because I think a lot of people are just so uncertain about what to do with their health care and what their obligations are. And for sure, premiums are going up and deductibles are going up, and we think there are better ways to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great.
Wish I knew what they were.
Yeah,
for sure.
We'll see. It's going to start taking shape here probably before too long. So who knows? But, well, if we don't have enough to worry about here, could you give us, before we wrap up, just a couple of more things that you're hearing about out there, some problems perhaps, and maybe some ways that you can give some contractors a hand and work on these and make it a little better.
Sure. Well, the good news is I think right now the industry is in as good a position as it's been in recent memory. You know, we, like all industries, we took a big hit in 08, 09, 2010 when we had the financial crisis. And the roofing industry for sure took a hit. People buy roofs when they need them. They don't go out and buy them because they think it's a fun thing to have. And so when money is tight or when there's a lot of uncertainty, people will patch a roof for another year or two or three rather than replace it when it should be replaced. And we definitely saw that happen. But we've been rebounding pretty steadily ever since. And we're in a place today where all segments of the industry are doing really well. We had some pent-up demand for sure. We're doing more in terms of repair and replacement work probably than we've ever done. And a lot of it has to do with what I talked about earlier, with making roofs more energy efficient and providing more energy savings. So we're doing retrofit work to help with that. So I think, again, the big challenge for us is going to be to find the people to do the work and to do it in a regulatory environment that allows us to do all the good things that we know we can do. If we can solve those two things, we'd all be in a much better place. The other area that I should mention here where NRCA has been really involved is in the building code arena. Because as you know, Dave, the way building codes operate is there's a model national building code, and then every local jurisdiction, state or city or county, has the ability to develop their own codes, but a lot of them rely on the model national code to develop their local code. But some don't, and some will change the code. And we actually, not far from the NRCA office, have an intersection where there are four different cities in each corner of the intersection, and each of those cities has a different code for roofing. So you have to know which corner of the intersection you're working on in order to understand what the building code requirements are. So we're playing an increasing role in that arena because it's confusing, it's complicated. Building code officials don't always understand what the code requirements are. And then the contractor assumes a lot of liability every time they put a roof on because it is supposed to be compliant with the local building code. So we think we have a big education piece to do to make sure our members understand what they're supposed to be doing. But we also, at the back end, we have to be advocating in front of the building code community and helping to educate those code inspectors and compliance officers so they know what they're supposed to be looking for. And then in the meantime, we have, as I said earlier, we have this kind of black market of illegal labor out there doing things that are totally unrelated to the building code and causing problems for everybody. So that one is that's a trickier problem, that's a deeper rooted problem that's going to take a long time for us to get right. And it has a lot of different moving parts and pieces, but that's a place where we're putting a lot of resources today because we really believe we need to be engaged in that.
Well, keep up the good fight on that. I know it's a real problem, but I've got one last question for you. We've touched on this a little before, but what do you see Trump doing for us? Good, bad, moving forward? I know that it's been a pretty crazy, what has it been, 3 weeks now? Been a lot of things.
Yeah,
happening.
I know.
It's hard to get your finger on it. But
been a lot going on, that's for sure.
Any thoughts on how that's going to change the future for us?
Yeah, I think it's a real mixed bag, not surprisingly. I mean, I think with every administration, you can say that there's some good, some bad, and some unknowns. And the good for us for sure is I think we're going to see a real effort to reform the regulatory burden. And there's already legislation that's been introduced. We've been asked, along with a lot of other trade associations, to supply information to the new administration about which regulations we think are unnecessary and too burdensome. And we've done that. And I think we'll see some effort to repeal or rescind some of the more onerous regulations that are out there. So that for sure will be helpful. Healthcare reform of some sort, I think for sure will be helpful. We're going to see tax reform happen in this Congress. It's going to take them a while to get that into a place where it meets all the rules that legislation needs to meet in order to be passed, but we'll get some kind of tax reform. And if we can get things like a reduction in the corporate income tax rate and repeal of the estate tax and some other things like that, that'll be huge for the industry and for the economy. And I think everybody wins if we can begin to have those kind of things happen. The big unknown for us and the one that we're most concerned about is, what's our immigration policy going to be?
Right.
Is it simply going to be keeping people out of the country, or is it going to be something that's more reasonable, where we can allow people in legally to do work that needs to get done? And then what do you do with the 11 million or whatever the number is, people who are in the country today illegally? We can't pretend, I don't think, that we're going to deport everybody. And we know that a lot of those people entered the country legally and just never left and have families here and children who are born here and therefore are American citizens. So the idea of imagining we're going to deport everybody is kind of crazy, but we need to have an adult conversation about that. What do we do with them? Is there a way they can become at least guest workers so we pay taxes for them and they feel more like they're contributing to the society? I don't know the outcome of that one, and I don't think anybody knows that today, but that's the one big concern that we have about this administration, is they're talking a lot about shutting people out. And I'm not sure that, for a lot of reasons, not sure that's the right thing, not only for the roofing industry, but for the country.
Well, this has been some incredible wealth of information for us, Bill, and I sure appreciate it. If our audience would like to get more information on NRCA, where should they go? I know you're probably changing your email address to bill@somebeachinmaui.com or who knows what, but what if our contractors are interested in getting more information or joining the NRCA? What should they do?
Sure. Well, the first and obvious thing to do is visit our website, which is nrca.net. Yeah, the .com was taken by somebody else.
Right.
But visit that. First of all, there's a ton of information in there just that we put out just for kind of the world to help themselves to. And it'd give you a kind of a flavor of what it is that we do and what we're about. And then feel free to contact me at any of the staff people here. We have about 50 employees now, Dave, and we're here to help the contractor community. So contact us. We have a staff roster on our website, and you can kind of get a feel for who does what. And if you have a particular question, if anybody has a particular question, whether it's about OSHA or building codes or education programs, you can kind of get directed to the right person there. And I'm happy to talk to anybody anytime that wants to learn more about NRCA. It's just begood@nrca.net, and be happy to take any questions, comments, or criticisms. That's part of what we do here.
Well, that's great. Well, Bill, thanks so much for coming onto the show, and I want you to enjoy your retirement if you ever get around to it. And one of these days, we'll have to get you back on the show, and you can talk about the best beaches or fishing spots with us.
You got it.
All right. Well, thanks again, Bill. I really appreciate it. You take care.
Good deal. Thanks, Dave.
And now for this week's business quick tip. After each show, I offer up a quick business tip that worked in our company, and it just might work for you. In today's interview with Bill, we talked about the number one problem we all face as roofing contractors, and that is the current and future state of our workforce. Where do we find them? How do we train them? And most importantly, how do we retain them? First, let's talk about recruitment. I'm sure you're all doing the basic no-brainer free stuff like we're hiring stickers on your trucks, something on your website, and maybe the want ads. But for us, we never saw any good people come from those sources. Anyone that's any good is working, and anyone that can't find a job is probably someone you don't want on your team. First off, it's bad form to poach people from other companies. I know it happens all the time, and I'll show you how to avoid it from happening to you. But I think that always comes back to bite you in the ass. Most companies don't take care of their people and don't treat them with respect. But a lot of people stay in bad jobs because they think all companies are alike. So you want to be sure that the word on the street is your company is different and a great place to work and build a career. Here are a couple of things that worked for us. First, we stopped having our annual Christmas party. A lot of people didn't feel comfortable and always got the chance that some fight's going to break out. It's not good. So we switched to the spring carnival, one with clowns, jumpers, and then prizes and a big barbecue. It was really for the kids and the spouses. Everyone loved the carnival, especially those kids. They all came home with prizes and had a good time. They all looked forward to the carnival each spring. Happy wife, happy life. But the best part was that it was open to our roofers' friends and families that were in the trade. Roofers all know each other, and whether it's from church or the bar, they all talk. And if we could get them to come to the carnival and bring their families, they could see how we were different and better than the current company where they might not be too happy. We handed out raffle tickets in return for their addresses and phone numbers, and we sent them a follow-up letter thanking them for coming. When I made my announcements and talked about how much we appreciated them, we would let everyone know that we were always looking for good people to join our team. And it worked. Picking up a couple of good guys easily paid for the carnival over their time with us. And second, we had a bonus system for anyone that brought us someone that we hired. The bonuses were substantial depending on their skill set and were paid out after 3 months on the job just to be sure they stayed with us. You need to understand the value to your company of a new recruit, not only in year one, but hopefully over the next 5+ years. But it's worth a lot. Next, let's talk about training. I'm always amazed to hear contractors who say, why should I spend a lot of money training someone when I know they'll just take those skills to another company or go into business for themselves? That's someone who's not going to be around long in this new economy. When I was a kid, my mom would tell me to load the dishwasher and I'd intentionally do a crappy job. I knew she would say, she might as well do it herself because it's going to take longer to train me and do it the way that she would. Whether it's the owner or job foreman, many have the same attitude. They say it's faster to do it themselves than teach others. Plus, they say, I'll do it better. But you're never going to spend much of your time on the beach if you don't teach others to take responsibility. Be sure you're teaching everyone to take responsibility for their job, and then get out of the way and give them a chance. Take the time to meet with each employee and lay out a plan for them to grow, and then give them a clear, regular, and honest feedback how they're doing. There's just too much water under the bridge to just only do an annual review. And remember, feedback is the breakfast of champions. It's worth the time to grow your number one asset. The biggest problem is communication. When someone is not doing the job I wanted, I usually assume that I didn't explain it well the first 4 or 5 times. But after that, they're either jerking you around, or they just aren't smart enough to do the job. But either one, they've got to go. Number 3, and finally, and most importantly, how do we keep them? Turnover can be a huge cost with production interruptions and the time it takes to find and train a replacement. This is why you need to make a huge effort to be sure you have a happy workforce. Never take an employee for granted. If they don't feel appreciated or respected, they're ripe to be stolen by your competition. You can say they're prima donnas and beat your head against the wall, or you can thank them for a job well done and grow a strong business. Pay is important, but rarely is the main factor for quitting a job. Your people are always getting poached, and the offer is always for more money. If pay was the only thing that mattered, you'd have a revolving door. We always paid our people on the high end of the scale, but we also expected a lot out of them. Not for just working harder, but for taking more responsibility. It's about giving them a clear career path, giving them the tools to succeed, and showing them the respect and appreciation for a job well done. The number one reason someone would come to me wanting a job was being disrespected or not appreciated at the company they were with. Good wages are just the ante to get in. Staying in is a matter of respect. Here are a few things that worked for us. The first couple of weeks are the most important and the time when they are most likely to leave and get buyer's remorse. Make sure you stay close with them and make sure they feel welcome. Whenever I went to a job, I would, of course, check in with the foreman, but then I'd go over to one of the younger guys on the crew and pull him aside. Simply ask him how it was going and if they needed anything. Maybe ask them about their family, but then letting them know I appreciated their hard work and to come see me if they needed anything. I prevented more than a few guys from leaving, usually over some small issue that we were able to resolve. Anytime I went on the roof, I never went empty-handed. Either a six-pack of sodas or a box of sandwiches always went a long way. You may say, it takes too much time and too much hassle. Stop spending your time grinding your suppliers for a few bucks and put your efforts where the real money is, your number one asset. We all want to be appreciated, don't we? But as a business owner, I never expected it.
That's it for today's show. If you want to get a copy of my new guide, 7 Steps to Getting More Qualified Leads for Your Roofing Business, go to my website at theroofershow.com, where you can grab it for free or click on the link in the show notes below. And as always, thank you for listening. I really, really appreciate it. We'll see you next time on The Roofer Show.